This is yet another clear statement that discrimination is not only un-American, it's un-Alaskan.
The Alaska Supreme Court finds in favor of same-sex couples in a discrimination case. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 25th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a surprise federal inspection finds unsafe radiation levels at a company in Kenai.
As they were walking around the outside of a building, they received a high radiation reading on a survey meter.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, earning Alaska's trust for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
A federal jury in Alaska has convicted a man of murder in the shooting deaths of two of his co-workers at a Coast Guard communication station on Kodiak Island. The jury returned its verdict today in the case of 62-year-old James Wells. He was charged with killing Coast Guardsman Petty Officer First Class James Hopkins and retired Chief Petty Officer Richard Belisle in April 2012. Prosecutors had alleged Wells, a civilian, was unhappy that his position was increasingly irrelevant on the job because of the advancement of the victims. The jury convicted Wells of six felony charges, two counts each of first-degree murder, murder of a U.S. officer, and use of a firearm in a violent crime. Federal prosecutors said earlier they would not seek the death penalty if he was convicted. State Supreme Court justices today decided in favor of two same-sex couples in a property tax case that could have wider implications for the state. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports.
The Alaska Supreme Court sided with two same-sex couples who had sued the city of Anchorage in a property tax exemption dispute. Both the state and the muni offer a $150,000 exemption in property taxes to seniors or disabled veteran homeowners. A lower court ruled in favor of three same-sex couples, saying denying the exemption to a person who is not the homeowner's legal spouse is a violation of a constitutional right to equal protection. The state and the muni appealed that decision. The High Court on Friday ruled that in the case of two of the couples, Alaska's ban on same-sex marriages does not allow the plaintiff couples to benefit from the exemption program to the same extent as heterosexual couples do who are allowed to marry. Joshua Decker, executive director of ACLU Alaska, says the decision is a win for gay rights.
This is a terrific win. This is yet another clear statement that discrimination is not only un-American, it's un-Alaskan. The Supreme Court clearly said today that the state and Anchorage cannot make lesbian and gay couples pay more property taxes.
The third couple, however, received a different ruling. In their case, the Supreme Court reversed the Superior Court ruling, saying that the exemption program does not apply to a senior citizen or veteran who has no ownership stake in the home. Pamela White is an assistant Anchorage municipal attorney. She says the state has a greater stake in the outcome of the case because it is state law that requires the city tax exemption.
The municipality really did not participate at all in the more substantive issues in this case. That was really an issue for the state.
In the Supreme Court hearing, state attorneys argued that the Alaska Constitution's marriage amendment trumps the Equal Protection Clause in this case. The Supreme Court justices did not agree. The High Court's decision has basically upheld the plaintiff's charge of discrimination based on sexual orientation. So does that chip away at the state's ban on same-sex marriage? The state's law department is not ready to comment. The State Department of Law said in an email through Assistant Attorney General Corey Mills, quote, "We just received the opinion this morning and are still reviewing it. Because of the potential implications of this case, it will take time to thoroughly evaluate the decision." ACLU's Decker says the state's argument in this case only enshrines discrimination in the law. and that the Supreme Court has ruled that discrimination against gays and lesbians is not okay. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
A testing and inspection company with facilities in Kenai is in trouble with the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission. A surprise inspection of Acuren's facility earlier this month revealed high levels of radiation outside the building. KBBI's Aaron Selbig reports.
Acuren is an international company that specializes in industrial testing and inspections. The company has offices throughout the U.S. and Canada, including one in Anchorage and another in Kenai. Its Kenai facility is located in the Economic Development District building on the Kenai Spur Highway. That's where inspectors from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission showed up April 10th for an unannounced inspection.
And as they were walking around the outside of a building, they received a high radiation reading on a survey meter.
That's Laura Uselding, public affairs officer for the NRC's Region 4 office in Arlington, Texas.
This immediately prompted them to leave the area. And upon encountering radiographers, the inspectors learned that these workers had just performed 6 2-minute images, resulting in this high survey meter reading.
The workers for Acuren were using a radiography machine, which contains iridium, to inspect welds on a section of pipe. Uselding says the company is licensed with the government to use that machine, but it did not have the proper safety controls in place at the EDD building.
Some of the physical controls that are part of a company's license involve barriers, basically around if it's going to be a building or if they're doing it outdoors, they have to have physical controls up, so barriers, signs, warning signs stating something like caution radiation area, two workers at the minimum, and one to be doing visible control of the area to ensure that no member of the public walks over or is exposed to any amount of radiation.
Uselding says the levels of radiation found inside the EDD building April 10th are not enough to be considered a biological hazard to anyone working in or near the building. There was no evacuation ordered, and no official warning has been given to employees working in the building.
The concern is that had someone from the public been standing near that building, then it's very possible that they could have received NRC's annual limit to that individual in just a few minutes.
That limit is an annual limit of 100 millirem, which Uselding describes as very low, lower than an average person would receive from background sources of radiation, like medical procedures. Acuren has agreed to stop its radiography operations at the facility until the NRC approves a plan of action to install the proper safety procedures. Uselding says the NRC plans to conduct a follow-up inspection of Acuren's Kenai facility in the coming days. She says the company has had two recent incidents like this, one in Texas and another in Ohio. Attempts to reach Acuren officials for comment were directed to an attorney for Rockwood Service Corporation, Acuren's parent company. Those calls were not returned in time for this story. Reporting from Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a woman in Wrangell who is working to solve the town's problem with stray cats.
I think I stopped counting at 600 cats that we've, handled through the rescue program. So that's a lot of cats.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you're ready to quit tobacco or just thinking about it, the coaches at Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line, a free service for all Alaska adults, can support you with Text to Quit, with tools to make your quit attempt successful. Text to Quit helps you stay in touch with your quit coach, use nicotine replacement medications properly, manage those urges to use tobacco, and prevent relapses, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Today, the Alaska State Legislature gaveled out 5 days after they were supposed to. It's the end to a grueling session that involved legislation on education and a major gas line project. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez joins us from the Capitol. Hello, Alexandra.
Hi, Lori.
So first off, what took them so long?
Honestly, this is going to sound kind of glib, but politics. The most obvious fight was over education funding. The House majority and the Senate majority, which are both led by Republicans, couldn't agree on what number they wanted for school districts and how they wanted to give that money for schools. The House wanted to give a smaller amount of money, but through the base student allocation, which means it's basically enshrined in the funding formula, where the Senate wanted to give a bigger number, over $100 million a year, but they didn't want to put any of that towards the formula. Education advocates aren't really happy with either approach. They wanted more money and in the formula. But in the end, they ended up kind of, and this is their word, splitting the baby and basically just taking the halfway point with each of them. And it took them 5 days to do that. And in the background, on top of all of this, you had a bill over the minimum wage that was priority for the House that never disappeared. We kept on seeing a hearing to discuss it delayed and delayed and delayed. And all along, you were seeing a lot of major personal bills from leadership being held hostage over this. You even saw a priority of the Senate president fail on the House floor by one vote on Wednesday night, forcing it to go into conference. And that's pretty unusual. Usually you don't see bills fail. Usually you don't see things that are so obviously targeted to ruffle the leadership.
What caused the breakthrough?
Well, once people have dug in their heels, there's really no point in dragging out a stalemate that will be incredibly unpopular with voters. And on top of that, it was unpopular with legislators themselves. The energy's been pretty low in the building for the past few days. You've had people golfing in the hallways. You've had members of the leadership outside in the parking lot and lawn chairs, people napping, people watching John Wayne movies, because nothing's moving. There were full days where you would have a meeting scheduled for the morning, and it would be delayed and delayed and delayed until 9 p.m. at night and then ultimately canceled. And people have plans. People don't necessarily want to be here. So once they kind of resolved the education issue, there really wasn't much point in staying beyond that to deal with the other sticking points.
Are there any consequences for going longer than 90 days?
Probably not. In the past, when they've gone a little past midnight, the laws still stand, even if they pass after 12 o'clock. According to the Constitution, the legislature can go for a full 121 days. That's how it was before there was a voter initiative that limited the session to 90 days. But they are ignoring a statute that was passed by voters back in 2006, which no one really wants to do. I spoke with the governor today, and he says he doesn't like the precedent, but he is glad to be done and understood that there was kind of this hang up on education that necessitated this. But honestly, quite frankly, everyone's happy to be done at this point, including the press corps.
Well, thanks, Alexandra, for joining us today.
Thank you, Lori.
That was APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez joining us from Juneau. Three different conductors will direct the Juno Symphony next season. They hope to replace Kyle Wiley Pickett, who will lead the Topeka, Kansas Symphony, and the Springfield, Missouri Symphony Orchestra after 14 years in the capital city. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander takes a look at the candidates.
At the end of the 2013 symphony season, musicians and board members gathered to answer three questions.
What are you looking for in the next conductor?
Violinist Kristen Garreau chairs the search committee.
What role does the symphony play in your life? And what role do you think the symphony plays in the Juneau community?
The questions were asked again in the summer and fall. The answers helped the 15-member committee come up with traits the orchestra wants in a new conductor. Garreau says lessons learned from the last recruitment in 1999 and the music director search handbook from the League of American Orchestras morphed into a blueprint for the current search.
We announced it on the Conductors Guild, the clearinghouse website for conductors.
That was in October. Nearly 70 applications rolled in. Only 28 made the first cut. Then 13 conductors were selected for interviews by Skype and reference checks, resulting in a list of 9. Committee members voted on each person to get to the remaining three. Though the job pays only about $35,000 a year, Garreau says the Volunteer Juno Orchestra demands a lot of its conductor.
Not only are they there to lead the musicians, but they're also kind of the face of the orchestra to the community.
That means music director, long-range planner, fundraiser, and grand communicator. The three finalists claim to be adept at all. Troy Quinn lives in Los Angeles, where he commutes to Rhode Island to conduct the Portsmouth Institute Orchestra, a gig he would keep if hired in Juneau.
Conductors nowadays never stay in one place. They're doing multiple gigs and flying from town to town.
Quinn has never been to Juneau, but already has a vision for making the symphony more accessible.
Being an ambassador for the symphony and being out in the public and the school system, in businesses, reaching people through different medias, and providing a balanced repertoire so that we've got something for everybody to come listen to.
Quinn will conduct the Juno Symphony in November. Wesley Schultz is the February conductor. He lives on Bainbridge Island near Seattle, where he leads the Bainbridge Symphony Orchestra, the Seattle Festival Orchestra, and two youth symphonies. He says he enjoys working with volunteer musicians more than paid professionals.
You get to discover along with them, you know, some of the elements of music that the professionals, you know, might think of as old hat.
Schultz also has not been to Juno and sees it as something to add to his current jobs. The final conductor candidate for next year's season is Jeremy Briggs Roberts. He is musical director, conductor, and executive director of the Washington, Idaho Symphony, which performs in the Moscow, Idaho, and Pullman, Washington areas. Roberts says Juno would be a natural extension of his current work.
I think one of the major things that I've really enjoyed here is we've taken the orchestra and really grown it into a community cultural asset. Juno seems to have done a very good job of that.
Outgoing Juno director Kyle Pickett has been commuting to Juno from Northern California for the past 14 years, where he's conducted other orchestras. He says he will live in California and fly to his new conducting jobs in Kansas and Missouri. Pickett will continue as musical director for the Juno Symphony next season, working with each candidate on music choice for the concerts they conduct. Symphony musicians and the audience will play a role in selecting the new conductor. The winner of the competition will be announced in June. In Juno, I'm Rose Marie Alexander.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Emily Foreman. This week on AK, cats. 10 years ago, Wrangell was crawling with feral cats. They roamed the streets, getting into trash and nesting in condemned buildings. Now it's hard to even find a cat downtown. That dramatic turnaround is due to the hard work of one woman who noticed the problem and decided to fix it. Dolores Klinke runs the St. Francis Animal Rescue, a nonprofit that has saved hundreds of strays. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver has the story.
Dolores Klinke is in her late 60s. She has salt and pepper hair and a big smile. As a kid growing up in New Mexico, she had all sorts of pets, and now she's Wrangell's most prominent cat lady.
Say hi.
Aww. You're silly.
Klinke operates St. Francis out of two shelter locations. One is a forested lot for feral cats, and the other is for adoptable cats, housed in her own garage. The first thing you notice when you walk inside is that it's spotlessly clean and doesn't smell like cats. And that's surprising, as it's currently home to about 20 rescues that live in kennels and cardboard boxes lining the walls.
This is Jack. That's Iggy, the black and white one, and that's his brother, Lasty.
Some have been turned over by past owners, and many have been live trapped around town. She works tirelessly with the wild ones like Kiki to get them socialized.
And at first she was very aggressive, but she was scared, you know. She was didn't want to be any place else but her own home. But now slowly she's getting better and better.
It's this unflappable faith in these little animals that led Clinky to start St. Francis in 2008. She says she was disturbed by all of the unwanted cats in Wrangell. At first, she picked up one or two strays at a time. Then she started rescuing entire cat colonies. She never predicted it would turn into a full-blown animal rescue.
I think I stopped counting at 600 cats that we've, handled through the rescue program. So that's a lot of cats. And that was, what, a year and a half ago that I stopped counting. I don't have the time. Just too busy.
Once she brings in a stray, she cares for it indefinitely. Every rescue gets a full lineup of shots and any other medical attention it needs, and she's adamant that each one gets spayed or neutered, preventing accidental pregnancies and litters of stray kittens. And fixing the cats is fixing the problem.
It seems like it's been about a year, a little over a year, that I haven't had any kittens come in at all. So that tells me something, that there are no kittens to be found in Wrangell, I guess.
It takes a lot of money to care for all of the rescues. Clinky says she goes through countless bags of kitty litter and cans of wet food, but she gets enormous community support. The city chips in $5,000 a year, and in 2013, Clinky raised another $14,000 through rummage and bake sales and private donations. But she says it's still not enough.
Every 28 days, we go through 6 bags of cat food. And then we have the other shelter that we have cats that we relocated. And there, over there, we go through another maybe 4 bags a month.
We drive to the other shelter about 5 miles out of town. This gated outdoor colony holds the feral cats that are not socialized enough to be adopted out. Clinky says the cats here often hunt for their own food. Cats appear left and right when they hear her walking around. She greets each one of them by name. One cat, Clown, follows us around. Clinky says she was an especially difficult rescue.
And the vet was coming into town, so we got her ready to go in to get spayed, you know, and I grabbed her, and that was the wrong thing to do. Boy, she tore my hands all up and bit. And we've got her, though, and we took her in, got her fixed, and I headed for the emergency room.
But that antisocial behavior doesn't keep Clinky from pampering them. Dolores Clinky truly loves her rescues.
They're appreciative. That's my favorite part of the job, I guess you would call it, but I love doing it. It's unconditional love. They don't ask for anything, you know. They really don't. All they want is food and somebody to love them.
And that's why she puts in the countless hours and money and doesn't really mind those trips to the emergency room to give these cats a place to call home. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to St. Michael, a primarily Yupik community of almost 450 people near Nome in western Alaska.
My name is Bobby Ann Andrews. I live in St. Michael, born and raised, and I am the current mayor. If I were to explain St. Michael to somebody who's never been there, I'd first off say it is beautiful, it's open, and we have hills, we have mountains, we have the bay in front of us and the ocean behind. We have a lot of tundra, we don't have trees. We do qualify as an island, although it's just a small little canal that disconnects us from the mainland. We have a lot of wildlife. We have birds and we have moose and reindeer that come onto our island, even bears. We do a lot of hunting for sea animals also. We put away a lot of fish during the summer for our cold winter months. And we also hunt seals and whales. Yeah, we gather a lot from our land. We put away some greens, berries, anything we can catch except scavengers. There are some people who don't rely on subsistence. About half our people still do. And a lot has to do with having a boat and motor, you know, to go out and check a net or go out hunting. We try to do holiday celebrations, and we try to get the ideas from the youth along with traditional things that were done, you know, even before I was born, the games that they played, and a lot of them had to do with having a skill for survival. In my heart, I'm just a small hometown girl, and I love where I live.
Bobby Ann Andrews is the mayor of St. Michael. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Shady Grove Oliver, Jolene Almendaris, Annie Fite, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Emily Foreman.
Finally, tonight we have breaking news about breaking ice. The tripod has fallen on the Tanana River that marks the end of the annual Nenana Ice Classic Contest. The official time was 3:48 p.m. today. The estimated prize this year is more than $360,000. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Aaron Selbig in Homer, and Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Monica Goki. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. Enjoy a lunchtime talk with Dennis Hayes, CEO of the world's most energy-efficient commercial building, on Thursday, May 1st, during the 6th Annual Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference at the Dena'ina Center. Individual tickets for this keynote luncheon can be purchased at bceaconference.com or 929-7770. Clean energy, it's everyone's business. This message sponsored by REAP.
Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.